Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
It's Tuesday, it's 2 o'clock, and it's Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio and Kinetic Hi-Fi. Want to welcome everyone. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick Annie, and I seem to be co-hostless. My co-host, Cool Mike, is missing in the wind, and hopefully he'll join us in a little bit. But we've got an exciting show lined up today, and I want to let everyone know officially we are broadcasting not just on BTR, but also on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina. So I want to say hi to all of our friends here in the Low Country, as well as the rest of the nation. Our guest today is going to be David Hale. He's running for Congress out of Illinois' 16th District. He's a Tea Party favorite, and we'll be joining him about quarter after the hour. Welcome everyone into the chat room. See some good friends there, Lady Michelle and Doc Jones. Welcome aboard. Our call-in lines will be open after I do the dedication. Those who listen to our show know that every show is dedicated to a fallen hero. And today's show is going to go out to United States Marine Corps Lance Corporal Matthew R. Rodriguez. He was killed December 11th, 2013, by a roadside bomb in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. And as I pull up the music for that, we will begin the dedication. And this is from the Boston Globe. Lance Corporal Brendan Matthew, a 25-year-old Marine veteran of the Afghan War, stood silently near the war memorial in the seaside town Thursday afternoon. His one-year-old daughter bundled in a stroller, and his military bearing made even more impressive by the dress blue uniform and the white gloves he wore. Quote, I know exactly what he was going through, said Matthew, a mortarman who was wounded by a roadside bomb in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Before him, the black hearse carrying the body of another Marine Lance Corporal from Fairhaven, 19-year-old Matthew R. Rodriguez, passed slowly in a long police-escorted motorcade before a solemn crowd of thousands from New Bedford and Mattapoisett. Rodriguez died December 11th, also in Helmand Province, in what the Pentagon described as combat operations. The Marine Corps said his death is still under investigation. He had followed the example of his father, who also served in the Marines, and became engaged to a Fairhaven girl after he completed boot camp. His fiancé's father, a family friend, called him the Smiling Warrior. That Thursday, the motorcade met his flag-shrouded coffin at New Bedford Regional Airport, where a small charter jet had brought the remains from Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. Dozens of relatives and a few hundred others, many of whom did not know Rodriguez, watched a precise, timeless ritual as the casket was removed in chopped, measured steps from the belly of the plane to the back of the hearse. "He's the same age I was when I went in," said Ralph DeBelsi, a 66-year-old Marine veteran who lives in New Bedford. DeBelsi, ambushed and shot in the arm during the Vietnam War, said he was uncertain whether he would drive to the airport and watch the transfer of the coffin. But the spirit of the Marine Corps, our brotherhood to those who serve and have served, drew him. "It's real sad, that's all I can say," offered DeBelsi, wearing a jacket with Semper Fi, the Marine Corps motto, scripted on the breast. "They tell you to go, you go." Many people like DeBelsi had come to the airport simply to pay respects to a fallen warrior. "He had laid his life down for his country. It's the least I can do," said Sean McKee, 34, who drove to New Bedford from Middleborough. "You don't have to know him to want to say thank you." Tiffany Trangese, a 27-year-old from New Bedford, stood by herself at the airport, a flag in one hand, and also said she had never met Rodriguez. Quote, "It's just a heartbreaking story for someone so young," she said. "I just wanted to show respect for his family. I'm a registered nurse, and I started working with vets at the VA when I graduated. It's just really important that we honor them. I couldn't do what he did." Chantel Sylvia, 37, in New Bedford, whose son attended Greater New Bedford Regional Vocational Technical High School with Rodriguez, said the fallen Marine had been a role model. "It was his outlook on life," said Sylvia. "He wasn't afraid of what he was facing." On the drive from the airport to a funeral home in Mattapoisett, traffic was blocked on Interstate I-95. Fire trucks stopped in salute on overpasses, and construction workers doffed their hard hats. In Fairhaven, hundreds of town people held their hands over their hearts. Others lifted miniature flags in a brisk wind, and a crowd of students from Fairhaven High School packed a small slope to watch the procession. From there, the motorcade passed Rodriguez's home in Fairhaven before continuing to the funeral home. The wake was held at Saunders Dwyer Funeral Home. After those services are completed, after the words of mourning are uttered, Rodriguez's name will live at the airport that received his remains, near the spot where his coffin was carried, an aviation-themed playground with slides and brightly colored toy planes has been recently opened. Rodriguez's mother, Lisa, a member of the Atlantic Aviators Club, pushed to build the new area for youngsters full of energy and fascinated by planes. In an event foreseen by no one, the place has been renamed the Lance Corporal Matthew R. Rodriguez Memorial Playground. This show is dedicated to all those brave men and women, to Lance Corporal Rodriguez, and to all those who have served, who are serving, and who will serve. We dedicate to them this song, "My Name is America," by Todd Allen Herndon. Thank you, and God bless.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud. Believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll rise up from the flames.
Herndon, my name is America, and I want to welcome to the show, late as usual, my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. Sorry, as always, you know, us bad students, teacher, we're late to class, but better late than never. And thanks, very excited about our New Year's Eve show to close 2013.
Yes, we got a great guest, and I'll bring him on very shortly, candidate for Congress, David Hale. But before we do that, I want to give a special shout-out to a friend of ours that we lost here on BTR, fellow BTR host that everyone knew as Loki. His real name was Timothy Curlin, and he passed away just December 21st. And I didn't realize he was just only a handful of weeks older than me. He's going to be greatly missed. He had the show, The Halls of Valhalla, and we want to give special prayers out to his family and to all our fellow BTR friends for a friend that we have lost here, a strong conservative voice that has been silenced.
Yeah, you know, I knew Loki. He lived about an hour and 10 minutes south of me, and he worked at the power plant not far from me. But, yes, definitely – Loki was big into, like you are in kittens, he was big into raising dogs. So if ever you talk to him on the phone, oh, my God, you hear dogs and dogs barking in the background. But, yes, he will be missed, and in our prayers, it's always hard to lose somebody, you know, 11 months out of the year. But it's in December, there's just so much more pain due to the holidays.
Yeah. So our prayers do go out to friends and family of Loki. But we got a great guest that we're going to bring along. He's running for Congress out of Illinois' 16th District. Let me bring his mic up here, and there we go. Good afternoon, Mr. Hale. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How are you?
Well, welcome to Southern Sense. And this week we're official on Kinetic Hi-Fi, also out of Charleston, South Carolina. So hopefully we get more people listening and more people donating to your campaign. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah. That would be phenomenal. Thank you.
All right. I would like you to introduce yourself. You are a founder of the Tea Party in Rockford, Illinois. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, sure. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely, perfect.
Beautiful. I can hear you good.
Awesome. My name is David Hale. I'm running for Congress in the 16th Congressional District, and I'm a United States Army veteran, a current registered nurse, 8 years in an emergency room. I currently work in health information management, putting computer systems in the hospitals. I've been a Tea Party leader for the last 5 years in Rockford. However, beyond that, I've been a conservative since the first time I saw a video called America's Godly Heritage back, 1989, maybe. And when I saw the movie, it completely opened my eyes up. I'd never heard some of the things that were discussed in that movie. Some of them have been disputed by some very reputable people. However, the essence of what was said and displayed and showed in that movie was phenomenal. So I've been a conservative for quite a while and been in these trenches for a long time with conservative issues.
Well, you came a little late to the game. I think I was born with it. There's something in my genetic makeup that just wouldn't let me go any other way. I'm sorry. I voted for Reagan both times.
Yeah, President Reagan was my commander-in-chief when I was in the military. And, look back on that, and it was an honor that he was my commander-in-chief. I've been listening to the Reagan Diaries on an audiobook, and this is a brilliant guy, just an absolutely brilliant man.
All right. Now, you're challenging the current representative in office. I'm going to mispronounce his name because you never really hear much about him. Adam Kinzinger?
Yes, his name is Adam Kinzinger, yes.
What caused you to jump into the race?
Well, wow, there's a long list. We could start with his legislative unpredictability. We do not have the congressman in office that many people voted for. So the congressman who is currently in office is not the one that people saw during the campaign and decided would be a better choice as a conservative than the previous occupant, whose name was Don Manzullo. He's legislatively unpredictable. Can't depend on a vote for him to vote for conservative values or issues. Additionally, the whole Syria issue was a kind of a tipping point where we said, we don't need to go to Syria, but he continued to drive forward with a desire to bomb Syria without any real clear evidence or real clear reason for Americans to shed their blood in Syria. And then just a whole list of other issues, he's not acting fiscally responsible. He doesn't, he doesn't really even connect with his constituents in this district. He is a moderate. He joined a no-labels group, but his district is largely conservative, and 90% it's conservative. So he's not necessarily unpopular, but he's not necessarily popular. He's one of those guys that kind of floats along on the stream like a leaf and doesn't really make any waves and gets in under the radar. So we need leaders in Congress, and I would rather have 435 leaders in Congress than what we have now, which is 434 leaders and followers and one leader named John Boehner. We need to.
I think that's great too. You're you're challenging him in the primary, and we need to do that more. We need to challenge these rhinos, who many of which, as you said, are followers. One of the big difference, I believe, and I've mentioned this numerous times on the show, we appreciate you joining us, is that in the 80s and some of the 90s with Republicans, these people were leaders, whether it was Newt or someone you didn't know. They were leaders. One of the reasons I think Justin Amash and Tim Huell's camp and many of those stand out now is because in the Republican Party there are so many liberals, you're not really sure if there's an R or a D next to their name. And I admire that. You're challenging in the primary. We need to do that more often with the same kind of passion that you're talking about right now.
Ronald Reagan said they sent us rabbits when we needed tigers, and that was during his term in office, and that's what we need. We don't need rabbits right now. We're in, you know, we can't make-believe anymore. We can't pretend anymore. Everybody likes to pretend that everything's okay, but the reality is it's not. And one of the pretenses that happens is these guys, they'll smile at you on the camera and never tell you the truth and never tell you something's really seriously wrong. They'll always, you know, kind of take this approach of be calm. We're gonna drink a martini. And the reality is that we need to start, you know, getting real about this and understanding not everything is okay. And we should still be calm, but we need to step up and say not everything's okay.
Yeah, now
Annie sounds like your kind of guy right there.
Absolutely.
I can ask a question real quick, Annie, sorry I interrupt, but I ask everyone this question. Why vote for David Hale? I mean, if I continue status quo, David, just from sitting on my butt, I get free health insurance, I get free phone, everything's free. You mm-hmm. talking about hard work and dedication? I mean, why vote for you? The guy I got now giving everything to me free.
Well, within my district, that's probably not the case. My district is comprised largely of farmers and factory workers and industrial workers. We consist of the Rockford area, primarily in large part the east side of Rockford, and then it starts up at the border of Wisconsin and it scoots down around Chicago and all the way over to the Indiana border. So largely this is not a district made up of folks that are getting free phones. This is a hardworking, working class, farming class district, largely made up of conservatives.
I noticed something that he was taking financial backing from a group called the Lunch Pail Republicans, and I've been hearing whispers about them, and I started looking at it because I really didn't pay much attention to them, and I'm finding that to be an extremely scary group because they're really not Republicans at all, are they?
No, they're not. They consist of guys like Dave LaTourette, who used to be a congressman, but he was thrown out of office because his constituents couldn't stand him. And yeah, it's made up largely of left-wing, ideologues, and labels such as Republican and Democrat don't really matter to them. You know, the Republican Party platform is more conservative than the Tea Party platform, if you've ever read it. And so they reject platform identities, and they stick with their, with left-wing liberal leanings, and that's the Lunch Pail Republicans. And they also have Main Street USA, and he's received some donations from them. He's received donations from the operating engineers, who like to pretend they are a moderate conservative supporter of Republican group. However, the operating engineers, 90% of all their money and donations goes to Democrats and electing Democrats. So, he's received about $10,000 from the operating engineers. He's received a lot of money from a lot of left-wing groups. And the groups that are absent from the list that I looked at the list for him to receive donations from are family groups and pro-life groups and conservative, a lot of any of the conservative groups. So he's got to vote the way his money is telling him to vote, and that's concerning to me.
That is.
Imagine that.
We do have a caller coming in on the line, area code 423. You're live on the air with David Hale, our guest. Who am I speaking to?
Dr. Ronald Cutberth.
Hi, Dr. Cutberth. You have a question for our guest.
This is David Hale, right?
Yes, he is on the line with us.
Yeah, David. I personally met him in Rockford, and he strikes me as a really solid person. I've watched his leadership of the Tea Party, Rockford Tea Party, in Rockford, Illinois, and I went up and visited up there and met him. And I have a question. I'm not sure if people really understand how much military time you have. What is your military experience?
Sure, Ronald. First off, it is great to hear from you. It was an awesome experience to meet you. You're just a great guy. And I thank you for all your support. My military experience, 3 years active duty, 3 years inactive reserves, and then another 3 years in the later 90s, well, the mid-90s, in the Guard and then the reserves. So it's about in and out of the military about 9 years total. I was a crew chief on a helicopter when I was in the military. So I did not go to any combat or conflict areas, and to be honest with you, I don't find that to be a bad thing. I'm happy because it's a tough thing to go into combat and have to take a life, and you know the men and the women that have to do that. I tell you what, I have the greatest amount of respect for them who have done that.
Yeah, I understand you have some education in nursing. How is that?
Yes, sir. I'm a registered nurse and been a registered nurse now for 11 years.
Well, that probably is your philosophical background. You want to fix people as opposed to kill them. You know, it's good. Somebody has to fix them up. You know?
Well, Ronald, honestly, just to interrupt real quick, it's funny you bring that up because I've found that In my heart, you know, if we want to talk hard issues, in my heart, I'm an advocate for people. And when I was working in a hospital, I was an advocate for my patients. I did everything for my patients to make sure they lived. I worked in an emergency room. And when you watch the life drain out of a human being, it's different than coming up upon a person who has already passed away. When you watch the life draining out of a human being, you understand the gravity of life. And I'm not saying people that haven't seen that don't understand that, but it made me an advocate for my patients, and I am an advocate for my constituents because I see it in a similar way where our nation is dying. I can't stand by and watch it happen.
Well, yeah, I've kind of seen that in how the questions you ask people to respond to the people in the Tea Party and other people to respond to on important social issues, to see how they're really thinking. And you pose it in ways that are really great, broad questions. I'm getting the idea that it seems like you've got some education as a journalist also, right? So it shows up, I think. Is that true?
Yeah, I have a degree in journalism from Southern Illinois University.
So it's really great. You've got a lot of education. That nursing degree thing is a lot of work, and then you've got all your military training. So anyway, I'll get off of it, and I'm really rooting you for you. You can see that.
Thank you, Ronald. Take care, brother. God bless.
Ronald, you don't have to hang up. You can stay. You can stay on and listen. I wanted to follow up with a couple quick questions. David, number one, just yes or no replies. No speeches, just yes or no. Repeal the Patriot Act. Number two, defund the NSA. Number three, yes or no, and I know the answer to this because I looked at your site, but for our listeners, pro-life or not pro-life?
Well, pro-life, yes. As far as the NSA goes, I would have to say, if you're only giving me two choices, I would have to say yes. And as far as the Patriot Act goes, man, if you're only giving me two choices, I'd have to say yes.
I can't give you easy ones. You want to be a congressman?
Well, you know, I would.
I think my whole purpose of the question is, I would
pull one part of it out and a couple parts of it out and abolish those. But if I'd have, I mean, if you give me only one that choice, it's got to be yes.
Well, and the reason I did that is obviously it's very clear. You, like many of us, are just frustrated in the direction that both parties are taking this country and our liberties are being stolen from us. And you look around and you think, how clueless can people be? But, I mean, and I admire you. I love the idea you're challenging an incumbent. You know, somebody who's fought for this country and sworn to uphold the Constitution is ready to really go to bat again for it. I just think that's terrific. Annie?
Well, I was going to say we should let Dr. Cuthbert do the interview because he's so marvelous. I want to thank him for that fantastic call. And if he has another question, feel free, Doctor, to jump in. We do have another caller coming in who is a fellow BTR host and friend of ours. Good afternoon, Thomas. You're on the air with our guest, David Hale.
I'm just listening on mute.
Okay. If you got a question, just raise your hand and we'll bring you back on.
All right.
All right. Now,
quick question. Recently, we have seen an awful lot of lawsuits taking place versus the federal government. Most of them have to do, obviously, with the so-called Affordable Health Care Act or / Obamacare. But also another kind of under attack by, it seems, the government is something Annie and I are in very strong support of. The Second Amendment. How about you let us know, what is your opinion on the Second Amendment for or against gun control? Just basically your spiel on there, where you stand.
Well, against gun control, absolutely. And I'm just disgusted at the lineup of men that I saw in a picture in Connecticut waiting to register their firearms. It was a disgusting display of to me, tyranny. So, yeah, I'm completely 100% pro-Second Amendment. I don't see any reason for gun registration. As far as what was the other one you were asking me about besides gun Second Amendment?
Mike?
I muted myself a second. But, yeah, the question was, we are seeing lawsuits regarding many religious organizations on affordable health. I mean, there's a lot out there. We don't even know the tip of the iceberg. And obviously some are. It's going to get to the Supreme Court because some are in this favor and some are in that favor. But overall, if you're standing on your soapbox and I throw that question to you, number one is how do you feel about that as far as the Affordable Health Care Act? And at number two, if you were in a congressman in standing, would you have voted yes or no for it?
Well, I would have voted no for the Obamacare, the affordable, so-called Affordable Health Care Act. But the bigger issue is, you know, all these folks are filing lawsuits against it, which is telling me that they've successfully funneled us into and distilled us down to a nation that is not governed by pre-existing law that's made by legislators, but governed by judicial tyranny and folks making and legislating from the bench. And it goes both ways. So what we're doing is we're having folks filing lawsuits in the hopes of going after a bad law to legislate it out of existence via a law and overturning a law by a precedent. And the reality is that we've got to stop playing into that game, and we have to come to this place where we understand that laws are not made by the bench. Laws are made by our legislator, and that passes on to the the president, and then the judiciary branch can either say, yeah, it's, you know, if it's challenged, they can say, yeah, it meets constitutional muster or it doesn't meet constitutional muster, but they shouldn't be able to create a new law such as Roe versus Wade based upon a decision from the bench. But bigger than that is our judiciary has completely misinterpreted and gotten away from our Constitution. So that I think that our judiciary is currently so corrupted that they're not even qualified anymore to interpret our Constitution because of all the left-wing activist judges that have been placed into those positions. So we've got to attack Obamacare from a legislative perspective. Do they have a right to file lawsuits? Yes. Do I agree with them filing lawsuits? Yeah. It's the only choice that we have at this point in time. I hope they win, and I hope through those lawsuits it shows the stupidity and the arrogance of the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yeah, now, I read the bill, and I've been writing about the bill since, I guess, July of 2009. I've been having it up on my blog, and I know what's in it, and people are only just now talking about the section in there of warrantless searches in the houses, because it's in the bill, and it states that if they think that you are not living a lifestyle, you're not eating the proper foods, they have the right to come in and inspect your cupboards and refrigerator, and if you don't have the proper foods, they can fine you. If you're not teaching your children the way they feel you should be teaching them, if you're not raising them according to their standards, they then can unceremoniously just remove your child, and you have no say about it. Would you be working on getting these parts gutted?
Well, I would be working on getting the whole thing gutted, and I'd be. But here's part of the failure of the Republican Party, and I hate to have to criticize them, but it goes to their strategy of silence. They had, you know, since the Affordable Health Care Act was put into place, they've had 3 years to dissect it, and you haven't heard much from the Republican Party about it, except for this, you know, shrill kind of hysterical hand-waving, let's go repeal it 37 times with no legislative task to repeal. But what they should have been doing for the last 3 years was taking it apart piece by piece like you did, Anna, and publicizing it piece by piece, putting a press release out piece by piece, putting out videos or TV commercials piece by piece, and preparing the American people for all the eventualities of Obamacare and all of its infringements of our rights, so that when we did finally come to this place and it was ready to be enacted, the American people would have been able to simultaneously rise up and say, no, we don't think it should be enacted. We need to repeal it. What they needed to do, rather than try to repeal it 37 times, was convince the American public to join them in repealing it and have the consensus of the American people to join them in repealing it. They didn't have a consensus of the American people because they didn't articulate all the problems with it. And we're still finding out all the problems. However, I mean, folks like yourself have gone through, they've found all the problems, and, you know, the Republican Party still isn't listening to folks like you who have gone through it. So it's going to take massive pain for us to end up repealing this broken and tyrannical health care law.
Well, they have a perfect weapon in just using provisions in there. All that they do is link slavery to Obamacare, and no one realizes that legalized slavery is inside the bill. They can go to any American, conscript their labor, force them to labor for the state without paying them anything, nothing in material or monetary. That's slavery. And as far as
sure
I
is.
Know, that is against our Constitution. We fought a war for that, but they, with Obamacare, have instituted it once again.
Well, and one of the problems, though, Anna, is propaganda that comes out of the mainstream media. When you don't have the mainstream media telling you the truth and giving you a full story, and when you have that mainstream media controlled by six corporations, you're not going to get a full story. You're not going to get a complete story. You're only going to get what they tell you, and you're only going to get what they want you to get. And, you know, it's been said if the media told the truth for a day, we'd have a revolution the next day. So we don't have the truth. It's impossible to get it out there.
All right. Well, I'm going to let everyone.
Well, Mike,
people know about the phone lines being open. The phone lines are open if you want to ask David Hale any questions. And the call-in number is 917-889-3675. And we are broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio in Connecticut Hi-Fi out of Charleston. So please call in and ask your questions. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. My congressman is Justin Amash, who I've worked for since he was the state legislature. I sent his campaign manager your link, so to alert him of your campaign. At times, I know they have listened to our show, but having somebody like Justin Amash on your side only can be a good thing, obviously, as he and many of the other Republicans are trying to fight for our Constitution. Secondly, this is an issue, and criticizing the Republican Party here in my state, they refer to me as a Democrat in my own party because I'm obviously always criticizing them. My question to you in regards to the party is, where do you think it changed? Because I mean, we used to be some of the things the Republicans support now. Just 30 years ago, if this was brought up, they would have executed these politicians for even suggesting it.
Yeah, I think it changed during the Bush years and the constant pounding George Bush, and some of it was justified, much of it was unjustified, but the constant pounding that the media did with George Bush, and I think it changed during those years because the Republicans were so, I guess, beaten down and tread upon by the mainstream media. It was a constant daily drumbeat, a minute-by-minute drumbeat of negativity in those mainstream media outlets that crushed the spirit, I think, of conservatism in the Republican Party to the point where they started thinking, well, if we can't beat them, we might as well join them. So I think a lot of it came about during those Bush years, and of course, now with Obama in office and his, you know, it being at the helm, so to speak, he guides the conversation, and it's difficult to break through the conversation that is happening between Obama and the folks in the media. It's kind of like this. It's like they have just this two-way conversation, and we're all just kind of watching it from the outside. So it's hard to break through that. And Republicans are thinking, well, we need to break through that. And I don't know why they won't stand up beyond, you know, being beaten down for the last 10 years.
Well, it seems like this current Congress, all they do is react to crisis. Everything is a crisis management. We've got to deal with this crisis immediately. And now, right now, the Democrats are waving another red flag in front of them, and it's immigration reform. Now, how do we get away from this crisis management?
Well, yeah, and that's another, you know, that's part of strategic planning. They need to sit down and start creating strategic plans, and it quite possibly is that this is their strategic plan. It quite possibly is that this is part of how they manipulate the public opinion into moving away from conservative values and more toward these left-wing socialist and Euro-fiefdom kind of values. But the reality is you need to have long-term strategic goals and plans. And if you don't have those, and if you're not continuously coming back to those and discussing those amongst your caucus, You're going to drift away from those, and that's what they've done. They've drifted away from those. So there's no planning going on with these folks.
So in other words, they're go ahead, Doctor.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I have some history on that, on the issue of the switch of the Republican Party. In my opinion, a very important part of it was that the left purchased most of the news media all over the world about 80 years ago, and they have used their news media, that's called mainstream media, all over the world for 80 years now that they own. And all of the politicians require publicity. Without publicity, nobody hears of them in the news, in the newspapers, or on the television. And if what they hear is derogatory and deliberately planned, just like the Nazis and the Soviets all had their propaganda, we had that all these decades from the mainstream media. So that has contributed to the move to the left, and that was the plan.
Well, so yeah, if you look at it's a byproduct of a number of issues. Of course, there's a deeper, longer-term issue that we've been distilling down.
Yeah.
But the educational establishment over the last 100 years and the media establishment over the last 100 years since the institution of the Fed, all of those things together have brought us to a more, it's taken a generation or two, how long is a real generation, 50 years,
well,
I don't know. But it's taken a couple of generations to completely remove any ideas of the values of independence that our country is built and based upon.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
it happened through the educational establishment and programming people through that educational establishment.
Uh-huh. Well,
David, let me throw this question to you, David. Let's say there's an issue at hand. Let's say you've been elected, which we hope you are, and many people like you. And an issue's coming up in a half hour. Well, here comes John Boehner, puts his arm around you and says, son, let me tell you how we do things around here. How do you react to that?
John Boehner coming over and putting his arm around me and saying, son, that would be funny. What would I do to John Boehner doing that? I'd say, hey, Pop, thanks for coming over and talking to me, I guess. I'd say my constituents are my first order of business, and I don't agree with this, or I do agree with this, whatever it is. My principles are going to, I guess, rule the day. I can't let the influence of somebody who might be bigger than life influence who I am, and I've never operated that way. I've never been that way, and I never plan to be that way.
Let's say amen to that, David. That's what I get. I live in East Tennessee now. I am from Rockford. I saw the down grade of Rockford and how it dropped. I warned people on the radio back in '77 about the problems in Rockford, and it got to be just what I thought. And I live in East Tennessee because of that, and I see you do understand all of that. So it's really that was my point of coming up and meeting you in Rockford, because I see you understand all of those issues and you've got a good handle on it. I'm going to travel now, and I appreciate the radio show of having you on there, and good fortune. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks,
Ronald.
Thank
you very much, Doctor.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I mean, a fantastic caller there. What a gentleman. I mean, we need more people like that to give you the support, David. And that's why shows like this that are becoming more and more popular, because mainstream media, or as we call it, lamestream media, is not carrying people like you. Unless you go on Fox News, no one knows you. We got another caller coming in, and let me bring this person in on the line. Area code 815, you're on the air live with our guest, David Hale. Who am I speaking to? Area code 815.
Yeah, well, my name is Dr. Robert Harner, and I'm having difficulty listening to the questions, and I can't get on. I don't have a way to listen. But my question is that how in the world can a man like myself, who's only in Northern Illinois, help in your campaign?
Oh, Dr. Harner, I know who Dr. Harner is. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time and your support. Well, the best thing you can do to help me is, number one, talk to your friends. Explain to them this is a guy that we need to give a little bit of attention to. And number two, you can donate to my campaign. And at the end of the day, or near the end of the campaign, we're going to have phone lists if you want to call people on the phone and ask them to get out and vote. So folks that are, you know, not super mobile and stay at home still have the option to use the phone or even use their email, create your own email list of, you know, 10 or 20 people and send out information that you might receive from me or send out information that you might receive about my opponent. So that you can show them that that I'm a viable candidate. So there's,
well,
a number of ways.
You have my email, and I want to be actively involved with it, but I'm not able to do much. No,
I understand, but I appreciate your time, Dr. Harner.
Thank you, sir. I want to continue to listen, though, because I've been working since 15 minutes to 5 to try to listen.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, you can stay on and listen.
And if you have another question,
stay on the line.
Yeah, and if you have another question, doctor, feel free to jump in. So just leave the phone. We'll leave your phone line and mic open for you to listen in and ask any questions. Now, your website, David, is electdavidhale.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. I have
it right now in the chat room. I'm posting that now in our chat room.
All right, it's on our show page, too, so people can click on that link also.
Sent a copy of your site, David, to the Notre Dame Fan Club of the Rockford, Greater Rockford area in Illinois, and the Chicago Bears Fan Club of Northern Chicago. So
great.
Awesome. Yep. Well, absolutely. You know, we need this. This is Annie and I in our finest hour. And Annie, I haven't seen our show's buzzing. We haven't had a guest. You brought this much attention and callers in a while. One other question I want to throw out your way. This really is aggravating to our the whole content of our show is a tribute to a veterans, and just the atrocity the way we treat many of these veterans. We have done numerous partnerships here with the Wounded Warriors Foundation, and Annie's extremely active in the South Carolina area. What would you do to best help these heroes who come home and pretty much they're basically given a handshake and said, thank you, take off?
Well, the first thing I would do is not vote for a budget like my opponent did that cuts $6 billion of their benefits, or at least a budget that specifically targeted them, which is what he did. He voted for a bill that targeted veterans and targeted, in particular, injured veterans. So I wouldn't vote for that kind of bill, and I'd stand in the Congress against that kind of bill, and I'd vote against that kind of bill. Beyond that, it's going to be a case of continuing to completely fund the Veterans Administration, which is notoriously underfunded. But one of the big reasons why it's underfunded is because we're paying $400 billion a year in interest on our debt, which is a big sucking sound for our federal government. Which $400 billion a year, you could just take a couple billion to fund that VA fully, and you wouldn't have a backlog of people waiting in line to get their benefits. And in particular, veterans who have been injured in combat. So we've got to fund the VA, but we've got to have that approach to government that says, let's cut down this waste, fraud, and abuse so that we can advocate for these veterans and advocate for folks like these veterans and do the right thing for them, if not for any other reason but for them. We hurt those veterans because of our debt. Our debt is hurting those veterans. Additionally, that budget voted to give billions of tax breaks to illegally present foreign nationals, and to me that was a slap in the face for veterans that are, the congressman who represents me currently voted for such a budget bill, and it's just reprehensible to me. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, now Lady Michelle in the chat room said that Congress is making $170,000 a year and sacrificed nothing, and not one individual in Congress took a cut, not one. And Chuck Schumer, I've got a different name for him, and I'll be polite, made this statement when he was challenged about the cut in the military benefits. His answer was, well, someone has to sacrifice. Everyone has to sacrifice. Well, these men and women have already sacrificed. They have given the ultimate sacrifice of their service to this nation. And
well,
that's
and
how...
I agree
go
with
ahead.
You. And
I'm going to get started, and I'm going to go on a rant.
Well, what bothers me about the cut is that it targeted veterans and injured veterans, and as opposed to targeting the entire government. It was the cost of living allowances that were targeted for these veterans. And my concern is that it wasn't an across the board cost of living allowance cut. It was specifically targeting veterans. That's my biggest concern. I could understand if they went to the government and said to all government employees and said, to include themselves in Congress, and said, we're going to cut cost of living allowances for everybody. We're not going to just target one group. We're going to cut it for everybody because we're in trouble. I could understand that, but they didn't do that. And just the unfairness of it and just the singling out of veterans is what it just doesn't sit right with me. Why target them? Why not target the IRS employees, or why not target the general population of employees, or why not target the TSA employees for COLA cuts? They targeted veterans.
Yes, they did. And I want to say out here, Lady Michelle said she's retired from the U.S. Army Reserves. I want to say thank you for her service. We appreciate all the veterans listening in. And the call-in line is open, which is 917-889-3675. So feel free to call in and ask David questions. Mike, I know that you're biting at the grip here.
I only have 50,000 more questions, David, before we I'll keep you posted till after midnight. Tell us about at what moment, obviously throughout, it's been a longer process as far as thinking this through, but what was the moment, was there a lightning bolt or where you decided, you know what, the hell with this guy, I'm running, I'm challenging this rhino?
I was really kind of tenuous about whether or not I wanted to even run and deal with it. It was just, it was a continuous avalanche this year of, of garbage coming down. And I was, had been toying with the idea and toying with the idea. And finally I said, you know what? I said, I just don't want to do this. And then I talked to a guy from the Occupy movement, actually. And we were talking about them going to bomb Syria. And I was vehemently opposed to it. And, of course, this Occupy fellow was too. So we kind of joined forces and said, let's do an anti-war protest, or at least an anti-Syrian war protest. And he said to me, he said, well, why aren't you running? You should run. And I was like, I should. I mean, if somebody doesn't run against this guy, we're going to continue to get this kind of thing for this district, and we're going to be represented in Congress by a guy who's going to continue to do these kind of things. And in that moment, I decided, I think that's time for me to just say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to run. I can't have a guy representing me unchallenged who's not really representing me. And I believe a lot of people in this district feel that way. My concern is that my message isn't getting out there to the level that it needs to get out there in order to really put up a significant challenge. So that's pretty much was the turning point for me, is that Syrian war debacle. Well, and the other part of that Syrian war debacle was that we know that the insurgents, the so-called, rebels, originally they were called the Syrian Free Army, and they were a byproduct of those protests that happened 3 years ago in Syria, which Barack Obama ignored. Well, eventually it became infiltrated by al-Qaeda insurgents and terrorists who are now cutting the heads off of Christians. In particular, they're killing children. Christian children, by the thousands, they're killing these Christians in northern Syria. It's a genocide that's taking place up there. with these Syrian insurgents, and Adam Kinzinger wanted to support that, and I was just, you know, I was beside my, I couldn't believe it. And in addition to that, Kinzinger, my opponent, is supporting the president sending arms to these people. They've got arms going to these Syrian rebels, these Syrian insurgents who are really al-Qaeda terrorists now. That Syrian Free Army has been transformed into a terrorist army. And I don't see how, you know, our men and women should go over there and spill their blood for those so-called Syrian terrorists. I don't see why we were fighting them in Iraq and Afghanistan and what we're going to support them in Syria. It's a schizophrenic foreign policy that I don't agree with.
All right, what's your stance then on how Obama is handling Egypt?
Well, they don't like him there very much right now, I don't think. They're talking about indicting him for collaborating with the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood is essentially being stamped out in Egypt right now by the military. They got sick of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's fine. I don't have any particular love for the Muslim Brotherhood, but I think that Barack Obama dropped the ball on that whole Egypt thing, and he rose with the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood, and there are charges that he helped them knowingly and that Hillary Clinton helped them knowingly. And, the Egyptians are taking care of removing the Muslim Brotherhood. They're now an outlawed organization in Egypt. I don't necessarily like their methods. You know, I don't necessarily like the Egyptian government's methods of going about that, which kind of appears to me to be a minor genocidal, approach to it. So I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't like that, but it's their internal war, so to speak, right now. And we don't have any business going over there, as a military. But I think that we do have a right, and we do have a responsibility to tell the Egyptian government that they need to treat people humanely, even if they are the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah. Now, look. Just, I believe it was yesterday that the Egyptian government arrested the entire staff of Al Jazeera in Cairo because of their pro-Muslim Brotherhood stance on that. But what no one is talking about, we've talked about Benghazi, the attack on September 12th last year, but no one's talking about that very same day in Cairo. Our embassy over there was also attacked. The walls were breached. The embassy itself wasn't breached. But it was also, again, about this alleged video. Now you've got the New York Times coming out supporting the administration's original explanation of it being about the video. You know, what is your stance on all this that they're doing?
Well, the New York Times, it's interesting. They send a couple of journalists over there to talk to the folks on the ground over there, and they expect to get the truth. And I don't put any stock in the New York Times so-called investigation. It's kind of a red herring with them. The reality is that something bad happened. We haven't gotten to the bottom of it. We need to demand answers from Hillary Clinton. She should be appearing before congressional committees every day until she gives an answer, a truthful, honest answer that's coherent, because she hasn't given a coherent answer is the problem. And until we get to the bottom of that, we should not back off, and we should pursue it completely to the fullest extent of the law. And I think it goes all the way to the White House, to whatever bedroom that Mr. Obama sleeps in at night. It's his 3 a.m. phone call that he was unable to answer. It's Hillary Clinton's 3 a.m. phone call that she was unable to answer, that she accused Obama of not being able to answer when she was running against him. So they dropped it. They blew it. And there's a lot of speculation of why the whole situation happened. It was so that Obama could have an October surprise. and free the sheik, one of these guys in a New York jail, or an arms deal, transferring arms from Libya to Syria, or something more insidious. Obama just, you know, wanted to eliminate the, you know, whoever. So I don't know. We've got to get to the bottom of it, and I just don't. I think that there are guys in Congress who are pursuing it, like Trey Gowdy, but there just needs to be a passionate, honest pursuit of it. There should have been an independent counsel assigned to it, but even then, you know, I don't know if we can trust anything that comes out of Washington these days.
I don't think we ever should have. That was the whole problem. People did trust, and then fortunately, look what it got us into. Now, we've got three members of Congress right now currently traveling through the hot spots in the Middle East. They're going into Benghazi and Cairo, Michelle Bachmann, Louis Gohmert, and I forget who the third one is. Would you recommend that during these really volatile times when there's warnings going out from all of our embassies to not travel, that these members of Congress should be traveling to these places? Because now you're putting additional American lives on the line because people have to escort them.
Well, you know, what are they going there for is my question. Are they going there on fact-finding missions regarding Benghazi? Are they going there on fact-finding missions regarding the genocide of Christians that are taking place? I know that triad of congressmen went through Syria also. So are they going through these places to truly calculate the big issues that are going on over there that we don't know about? Or are they going over there for a kind of a PR tour? I don't know. If they believe that their job is to go there and find out what's going on, and they are willing to risk their lives, I completely support what they're doing. If they're going over there for a PR tour, then they need to come home and they need to quit wasting our money. I don't know what they're there for. That's, you know, we need to find out why they're there.
All right. Now, to change the subject a little bit, you have on your website a link that goes to the U.S. Tax Bill of Rights. What's your stance on our current tax code? Would you be there for amending it or completely throwing it out? What would you do?
Well, the Republican Party platform calls for the 16th Amendment to be repealed and a national sales tax to be enacted. That's the Republican Party platform. That's not a Tea Party right-wing zealot, crazy nut, you know, wild-eyed extremist talking about that. That's the Republican Party platform. So from my perspective, it's plain, it's clear. Repeal the 16th Amendment, repeal corporate tax, repeal all the IRS taxes completely, 100%. Close down the IRS and institute a national sales tax. That's the extent of it.
So you would be for a fair tax then?
Well, and they call it the fair tax. I don't necessarily agree with all the aspects of the fair tax. I don't like the 23% price tag as a federal income tax. That kind of bothers me. It worries me. I would prefer to call it a national sales tax and just a straight, flat-out national sales tax that doesn't tax the basics of food, water, milk, eggs, dairy, so on and so forth. For people, you know, they need to get their staples. I don't think we should tax those staples, but everything else should be taxed at a fair national sales tax. I don't think 23% is a fair national sales tax.
Yeah. Now, I looked when I was going through your website. And I'm trying to find it, and I know we've got it here somewhere. But you have on there a sample of a paycheck. And then you list all the taxes, all the deductions that are taken out. And I looked at it, and I said, gee, you know, you're talking about a 25% tax on a paycheck. And then add in all the additional taxes when you go to, like, at the gas pump, for the grocery store and everything else. You know, you're paying almost a 50% tax on every single dollar you earn.
Yep.
I mean, just to pay your corporate, not your corporate, your federal taxes, You have to work 1.4 days a week in order to just pay your taxes. And
yep.
I think that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, we got another caller in on the line. Area code 815, you're on the air live with our guest David Hale. Who am I speaking to?
Jim Lehman.
Hi, Jim. How you doing? What's your question?
Well, I have a question for David. I've corresponded with him quite a few times on email via the Rockford Tea Party. Have you heard of this one-penny plan that Hannity talks about where to reduce the debt, if we just cut one penny out of every dollar of the budget, we would be able to balance the debt? I don't recall whether you said it was 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, whatever it was, but one penny is a pretty small amount out of every dollar to cut. Would you be in favor of that?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, Jim, hi there, and it's nice to talk to you. Yeah, the penny plan is a plan that was created by Duncan Hunter, who's a congressman out in California. It's a great idea. We need to cut down the size of government, and that's a great start. I totally would support it, and I support any other kind of any kind of cuts that we can take to government without hurting people. It would be great.
Well, if we couldn't cut a penny out of every dollar, I mean, every person that has a kitchen table of their own, I would think would be able to cut a penny out of every dollar. I mean, that's not asking a lot. Of course, getting the other side to cut a red cent out of anything is like pulling teeth. I mean, they will spend money. They'll find things to spend money on.
I agree.
All right, go ahead.
One of the things I was going to ask David Hale is, do you see yourself aligning with a side of the Republican Party? And by that I mean there's the Ted Cruz side, and there's the senator from Kentucky side, Mitch McConnell. Many of us are truly agonizing over the fact that there is not enough conservatism in the Congress. We conservatives feel very underrepresented.
Oh, yeah,
we're kind of
yeah,
scared in the same respect, David, because there's a split in the Republican Party, and we're scared to split it anymore because the Democrats march in lockstep. They're on board with each other all the time, whereas the Republicans, we don't circle the wagons. We circle the firing squad. So we're kind of afraid. What is
yeah.
your thought on that?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. The Democrats, there's not a lot of free thinking going on over in the Democrat Party. And most of the free thinking is going on over in the Republican Party. And to me, that's more of a sign of a healthy party. However, it's not the sign of a unified party and a house of divided itself. You know, it's ultimately going to be conquered. And so
yes.
the way I see it is the Democrat Party is really, really unhealthy. But they're strong because they are unified in that lockstep, like you said. Whereas the Republican Party is full of a lot of healthy people who ask questions, who are inquisitive and intellectually curious about everything. But it's also our Achilles heel. So, you know, it's a catch-22. It's a tough thing to deal with, and it's hard to change. And in order to change that, you have to really ultimately surrender your most deeply held personal values and principles to go along with the hope that potentially, someday, possibly, it's going to all be reversed.
Well, the question becomes,
so,
can we defeat them? Can we win if we continue to be divided? And if we come to the conclusion that we cannot defeat them, that we cannot win an election, be it midterm or in 2016, if we come to that conclusion, what are we going to do? We're either going to have to capitulate, cave into Mitch McConnell and John McCain and march along with Lindsey Graham, or we're going to have to say, hey, to heck with you. We're jumping on with Mike Lee and Ted Cruz. So,
right. I would stick with Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, and even if it means I'm not going to say it does mean that. And I mean, I'm certainly not a prophet. I don't see what's going to happen in the future. But if we're going to lose, which we're going to continue to lose, there's no way that I'm going to continue to lose by joining their side. I'm not going to join their side and continue to lose. You know, that's the proposition. The proposition that's put out there all the time is, well, if you just join our side a little bit, we'll give you what you want, you know. And the reality is that never happens, and it's continuously been the part of the downfall, going to the earlier question, of the Republican Party. We'll just budge a little bit over to their side. We'll compromise a little bit more over to their side, and eventually we'll get what we want. But that's the trick of the left. That's the magic act that they're able to successfully pull off.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely right. That is a trick of the left. They always want us to move left. No one ever winds up moving right. Leave us on the outside looking in. Listen, I'm not going to take up your entire day because I'm sure you have other callers, but I just wanted to get your philosophy on whether you're willing to just throw to some extent your caution to the winds and go ahead and align yourself with the Ted Cruz's and Mike Lee's. There is a sizable amount of us people that like what we hear from Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. We like Trey Gowdy. We like Louie Gohmert. We like Michelle Bachmann. We don't have enough of them. We want another one. I hope we can get people out to the primary.
Don't forget Justin Amash.
Justin Amash is the... I'll tell you what, if I got elected, Justin Amash would be the first person that I would not knock on his door.
Well, he's probably going to knock on your door because he has your link. Now, as I said, I'm a big supporter of his. And here's a perfect example for the guy who just called.
Thank you.
The guy who just called, don't hang up, Justin Amash and his friend Kerry. Kerry is a guy from Detroit who's basically, I always like to call him the hot-tempered Dago. He doesn't take nobody's BS. He got pissed off and he decided to run. Well, he won. And he and Justin Amash are both very strong conservatives. The GOP is primarying both of them. And I think this is the best thing for our side because you're seeing more and more people just rally behind these people because the only people supporting those candidates are, number one, the RINOs, and number two, Democrats, hoping that the weaker candidate will beat our person in the primary because they don't want to face someone as strong. So I think here's a perfect example is this is a battle within the party, and we need to be successful and win it.
Yeah, we have a perfect
Amen,
example
brother.
Here. We have a perfect
Amen.
Example here in South Carolina. That's how we ended up with Mark Sanford being elected into Congress because we had that primary with 16 people running in the primary, and we were successful in putting a solid conservative in. Now we got the same thing going up against Lindsey Graham. We've got four people going into the primary. We've got one solid front runner, Lee Bright. And right now he's going neck to neck with Lindsey Graham in the polls and is a good chance of Lee defeating Lindsey Graham in the primary. Our only problem with our primary is our primary here is open. So you can end up with Democrats coming in and just trying to spoil the vote. Now, are your primaries open or closed in Illinois?
No, they're open. You can be a Democrat and pull a Republican ballot, but you can't. You know, obviously, you can't go and vote in both. You can only vote one or the other.
Well, that's our problem here. That it is open, and Lindsey Graham is dependent upon those independent voters, which are the voters that are leaving him now the fastest. So we got to keep on chipping away. And that's why I think to answer Jim's question is that are we destroying the party by making a house divided? I don't think so. I think what we're doing is we're starting to clean that house out. And a lot more of the conservatives are finally coming forward saying enough is enough. People like you, David, coming forward and saying I've had it. It's time to take our nation back. And we're taking the nation back by taking our party back first. So I've got a lot of hope. I have a lot of hope.
Me too. We'll see what happens this year if we get a lot of – you know, in Illinois it's tough because Illinois is really a purple state. But in a South Carolina, in a Texas, North Carolina, those are states where I think we'll make some gains and we'll make some pickups for the conservative column within the party. Illinois, it's a little bit tougher here in Illinois.
Well, and I believe that. Obviously, the facts are correct as far as what you point out in Illinois. But you know something? Everything starts local. And look at just recently with Sharpton. They barged in on them, and they were, I mean, it starts with a handful that are just finally tired of the bull crap. And just, that's where it starts. And obviously, to see that done in Chicago was really a breath of fresh air, because many of these people are nothing more than poverty pimps. I mean, they suck the life, but they take advantage of anything and everything for their own personal gain. And I mean, hopefully, I really was very, very impressed, not only with the way how knowledgeable you are on the issues, but what has inspired you to run is basically your loyalty to the Constitution and watching your current rhino congressman, who is anything but loyal to our republic.
Well, I'd like to tell people that I'm shovel ready. I will be able to go into Congress and on day two be able to effectively make decisions as a congressman. It won't
take
a lot. Yes.
The only problem that I would have with that, and I would caution you to use that term, is because when Obama used the term shovel-ready, it was anything but, and he turned out to have the longest nose of the year. I don't know whether I'd want to use the term shovel-ready. You know what I'm saying, buddy?
Well, you know, it's just kind of a buzzword, but I take the caution. Well, thank you. But anyway, so I am prepared to go to Congress second day and begin to be able to make decisions that will affect my constituents, that will affect our nation. It's not going to be a huge learning curve for me. I've already got a good grasp of the issues, and I believe I have a better grasp than my opponent has. Although, you know, my opponent was a formidable candidate also prior to becoming a congressman, and many people had great hopes for him, to include Sarah Palin. And, you know, he was a county board member before he became a congressman. So, you know, the guy was formidable. I just think that he doesn't really have a good grasp of the issues, and I think that he doesn't have a good grasp of the principles of conservatism. And, you know, he's been one of the major critics nationally of conservatives across the country. You know, I want to get back to something that you mentioned earlier about, you know, the paycheck. And when you look at that that federal withholding on that paycheck, that federal withholding across the nation, everybody's federal withholding combined into one big pot, is what goes to pay the interest on the national debt. So $400 billion a year we pay on the interest in the national debt. And the national debt is $17 trillion. A lot of people say, well, it's a fiat debt and we don't really have to pay it back. That's not true. It's absolutely, that is so far an accurate statement. We pay that national debt off through payments, number one, but also we maintain it through that interest. And that interest is what kills us. It's $400 billion a year. I don't know how many mouths we could feed with $400 billion a year, but we could feed an awful lot of people. Now, the problem is we've got this minimum wage issue coming up. They want a national minimum wage of $7.50. Well, what if we had a big tax cut? That big tax cut would be a huge wage increase for everybody. But we can't have a tax cut. We can't have a tax cut through or a wage increase through tax cuts, because we can't cut taxes, because we have to pay that $400 billion a year in interest that goes to pay right out of our paycheck. It's paid from our paychecks. So we have to get a hold of this national debt. And the only way to get a hold of this national debt is through penny plans like Duncan Hunter's or Rand Paul's budget plan or the Cato Institute budget plan. That's the only way to get a hold of the national debt. We've got to cut the size of government down, stop spending money that we don't have, and get our amount of our debit or our receipts that we have to pay out lower than our revenues. And our revenues yearly fluctuate between $2.2 trillion a year and say $2.6 trillion a year. We spend about $3.6 trillion to $4 trillion a year. Even not, you know, this budget notwithstanding, it's gonna be a $3.6 to $3.7 trillion budget. So that's going to still create a deficit of about $1.2 trillion every year that this budget is in place. That $1.2 trillion is going to go directly onto our debt. So that means that they're going to have to raise the debt limit. They're going to have to continue to raise that debt limit. They're going to have a debt limit fight coming up again. They're going to have to raise that debt limit because all the money that is deficit spending gets thrown into the debt pile. So deficit is your yearly issue. Debt is your cumulative issue. And we've got a $17 trillion cumulative debt that until we deal with that $17 trillion cumulative debt by cutting spending, we will not get out of debt, and we will continue to pay those $400 billion a year in interest rates on that debt. So this is not something that we can write off. This is not something we can just tell China where we don't owe you the $2 trillion that you bought or the other foreign entities, the rest of the $3 trillion that they've bought, because we have $5 trillion in outstanding foreign debt that we owe. They own that debt.
All right, David, we're down to our last 4 minutes. This hour and a half has just flown. We've had some fantastic and knowledgeable callers that came in. I mean, say, this must have been the most impressive group of callers into our show than ever before. So, David, I want to thank you, and I wish you the best of luck. And your site, again, is electdavidhale.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right, and we welcome you back anytime you want. You let me know, and we'll schedule it again.
Thank you so much, Anna. I appreciate it. You and Mitch. Was it
Mike? Yeah. Well,
thank
and also, David, just so you know, I'm getting a group of people together for. I'm a Bear season ticket holder, and I'm going to try to organize at least a handful of people, at least one day between now and your primary, that we maybe can loan you some hands and some feet to knock on some doors and do some office work for you. So that's how we roll in the true conservative movement.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Mike.
Well, I welcome everyone back to listen to us again on Friday. We've got a great guest. He's a columnist. His name is Eric Rush, and he's got some amazingly witty and very knowledgeable pieces. So he'll be joining us on Friday. So please, again, have a safe and healthy week and a happy one. So I say until then, man, this show has flown, Mike. I've got to say good night and God bless to everyone, right?
Absolutely, Annie, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
you've
face.
Been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American, I've got the will, again. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.